Well, aside from Tim's wonderful joke telling, I'm sorry, I had to. It's an icebreaker. We're going to look at something that may not be as funny or as amusing as we might want it to be. And that is, we're going to talk about greed today. 2 weeks ago, I preached the sermon of Naaman, and we learned how Naaman had leprosy. Naaman was a man who had everything. He had power. He had position. He had prestige. But we learned that he had leprosy, and that's something that Naaman, his power, his position, could not heal. And so God worked through the faith of a little captive girl to tell Naaman where he could go in order to be healed. And Naaman went, but before Naaman could be a recipient of God's grace, Naaman had some things to overcome. He had to wrestle with his pride, his expectations, and his stubbornness. And once Naaman did that, he then received the grace of God that he wanted to, and it was by faith. And so we learned last week how Naaman was changed by God's grace. Tonight, we continue in the book of 2 Kings, 2 Kings chapter 5. But Naaman is not the center of attention, rather a man named Gehazi. Gehazi isn't known because he was a man of faith and he was healed by the grace of God, but rather Gehazi is known because he was corrupted by greed. And as one author says, here we have a contrast of a converted pagan in Naaman and a perverted Israelite in Gehazi. Once again, where faith should have been in this Israelite, Gehazi, it was absent. And in the story of Gehazi, we see just how greed and covetousness hinders our devotion to the Lord. Gehazi's story is a picture of religious hypocrisy and false values that destroy our pursuit to do right in God's kingdom. It is a story of human rationalization that seeks to find good reasons for bad things. And we also see just how our greed and our covetousness, it ruins our character and it leads to our downfall. And you know, to get practical, this is a lesson that we all really need. I am one who struggles with greed. I seek to find my happiness and my peace and my security in the things of this world. And I seek to find power and pleasure and desire in the things of this world. And so this lesson is not just something I'm just preaching to y'all. I'm preaching to myself, more importantly, because it's something that I recognize in my life that I have to change. And it's a problem that we should not ignore. God doesn't ignore it. He addresses it in his word. And so I think if we want to be better disciples, if we want to be better people for the Lord, we will have the honest hearts to look into this text and see what God has to say about our problems, about our challenges with greed and with covetousness. But before we read 2 Kings chapter 5, I'm going to start in verse 20. But I want to bring us up to where we are in verse 20, because really the story in verses 15 through 19, it helps us see how we get to this point. And so if you remember, Naaman, once he was healed, he changed his life. He started to think about people differently. He started to act differently. And one of the things he promised Elisha was that once he went back to his hometown, he would not worship any other gods but Yahweh. And if you remember, he also made the statement that he hopes that when he goes back, that this king of Assyria, he's going to want to celebrate, and they're going to go to the temple or the idol or the temple of their idols. And he tells Elisha, I hope that when I go into the temple and do my service, that it is not a sin against God. And so here is Naaman. He is changed by God's grace. And we certainly see that. And once he tells Elisha that, Elisha does not rebuke him for telling him that. He tells him to go in peace. And so there we are in verse 19, but we'll start reading in verse 20 all the way down to verse 27. 2 Kings chapter 5, beginning in verse 20. The text says, but Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, thought, behold, my master has spared this Naaman the Aramean by not receiving from his hands what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. So Gehazi pursued Naaman. And when Naaman saw one running after him, he came down from the chariot to meet him and said, is all well? He said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, behold, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and 2 changes of clothes. Naaman said, be pleased to take 2 talents. And he urged him and bound 2 talents of silver in 2 bags with 2 changes of clothes and gave them to 2 of his servants, and they carried them before him. When he came to the hill, he took them from their hand and deposited them in the house. And he sent the men away, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said to him, where have you been, Gehazi? And he said, your servant went nowhere. Then he said to him, did not my heart go with you when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? Is it a time to receive money and to receive clothes and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants? Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever. So he went out from his presence, a leper as white as snow. And so what are some things that we learn about greed from this story? And the first thing is that greed begins in our hearts. If you notice in verse 20 of 2 Kings 5, the two simple words, Gehazi thought, those 2 words resulted in Gehazi's corrupted life. You see, Gehazi's thoughts were the driving force for his greed. And that's what greed is. Greed, it begins when we want more than what we already have or should have. And so when I want something that I don't need, like Gehazi, I begin to rationalize and I make up reasons why I want more money, why I want more clothes, why I want more shoes or whatever I want. And I try to find good reasons. I try to validate my reasons and my excuses for wanting it, not because I need it, but simply because I am only trying to fill a void in my life. And it is the greed that I am trying to fill a void in. And you know what? We will go after our rationalization. We will go to extreme measures, and then we'll start to go into large amounts of debt to try and purchase what we want. Or we'll go into that savings account that we're not supposed to touch so that we can get money out of it just to purchase or buy whatever we want. And it can also lead to us stealing. It leads to people dying and people being mistreated and manipulated. And this is all when greed starts in our heart. And it is a very serious thing. It spreads like cancer and it infects us as well as the people that we have influence over. And that is certainly the case with Gehazi. And as I mentioned, the bad part is that it doesn't just start in the heart. It grows over time and it expands. And if we don't have our greed checked, then unfortunately it's going to corrupt us like it certainly did Gehazi. And that is what we did, and that is what we see. And so in order to make sure that greed does not corrupt my life, or that these little thoughts that I have don't evolve into something else, I need to be real with myself. Instead of allowing greed to control my life and harden me and make me less sensitive, I need to be honest and say, I'm greedy and I need to change before I lose my soul or before I hurt someone else. It's as simple as that. When we recognize greed, we have to have the honesty and the humility to confess it and to turn away from it, whatever it may be. As Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, verse 15, guard yourself against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist in the possessions he owns. Paul said in Colossians chapter 3, verse 5, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. And so we see that the Bible is clear that it addresses the issue of greed and of covetousness. And in order for us to be better people, we need to make sure that we have the honesty and the humility to recognize when it starts in our hearts. But something else, or in addition to that, from Gehazi we learn that the greed started in his heart and it was founded upon this corrupt view of God's grace. And that is seen in verse 20, where Gehazi says, my master has spared this Naaman the Aramean by not receiving from his hand what he brought. I will go after him and get something from him. We learn here that grace was a free gift. And when Naaman tried to offer Elijah a gift, Elijah refused it. He rejected it. And Elijah was trying to illustrate to Naaman by his own life that grace is something that you cannot pay for. There is nothing good that you can do. It's nothing right you can say in order to receive God's grace. It is a free gift. And we have to remember that Naaman, he was converted, but he didn't know much about Yahweh. And so he didn't know about all of these spiritual principles we know about. And so here, Elisha is trying to help him see that. But Gehazi, on the other hand, was blind to this principle. That Gehazi saw Elijah failing to take anything from this Gentile, from Naaman, he felt was kind of weird, that it didn't make sense. Because after all, Naaman was one who raided and took the Israelites' possessions. And here's a time where they can get all of that back. And Elisha doesn't do that. And Gehazi has a problem with that. And so instead of being an example, Gehazi was a stumbling block to Naaman. And you know, when I look at this, we look in our religious culture that a lot of false teachers have a corrupt view of God's grace. That a lot of false teachers will tell people, hey, if you follow Jesus, well, you'll be free from your sicknesses. And you'll have a lot of money. You'll have that dream job or that dream relationship that you want. And we know that from the scriptures that is not true, because we see God's people, they don't get all this worldly treasure. They don't get what they want. Instead, they get the complete opposite. And we have to understand that God is just not in the business of making sure that everybody is sick and making sure everybody is not suffering. I know that's a difficult thing for a lot of people to deal with, but that is what heaven is for. God is in the business of making sure that people's souls are saved. And that is what we ought to take with us into the world. But this simple point about Gehazi being corrupted by or having this corrupt view of grace. You know, when I think about this, I have to ask myself, do I feel entitled? When someone asks me to help them, do I feel entitled for them to give me something back in return? I've come to learn, and there have been many people who have taught me that as a disciple, you don't expect anything in return. You do things, you help people because of the joy of serving other people. And it is because God has been gracious to you, and in return, you want to be gracious to others. And so that's something that stuck with me and that I try to emulate in my life and continue. And I think we would all do well to remember that principle. That God has been gracious to us, and so we be gracious to others. But in addition to that, not only did Gehazi have a corrupt view of grace, but it led to the wrong view of people. Gehazi had a wrong view of Naaman. If you look in verse 20, he says this, "Behold, my master has spared this Naaman, the Aramean, by not receiving from his hands what he brought." Now, to Gehazi, Naaman was not someone who had just been healed by the grace of God. But if you notice the wording, he said, this Naaman, the Aramean. I mean, he's not even referring to him as someone that has been changed, someone that he has fellowship with. And that is exactly what grace does. I mean, excuse me, greed. And greed will lead you to have a different view about your relationships, that you'll be willing to step over people to give what you want in order to secure your kingdom and to secure your power. And when people get in your way, you have to make sure that you move them out of the way. And that is exactly what we see with the life or with the story of Gehazi. But also it makes me think that if I am always hoarding my possessions and if I am always buying, that hinders me from being able to benefit or enrich the lives of others with my possessions. And so perhaps I can make do. I don't have to go and buy a new coat. I can make do with the coat that I have from the past winter time. Or perhaps I could donate something that someone will have need for. Or perhaps I can put money aside to help people that are in need. I know there have been a lot of brethren who do that. And that has been extremely helpful because they always have something to pull from when someone has need. But these are ways in which we can control the greed that is in our lives. It is a way to help us view people rightly, because we are seeing that we are putting people first ahead of ourselves, and we are not being selfish. And that is what the Lord would want us to do. And that's certainly what we do not see in Gehazi. And so we learn that greed, it starts in the heart. And then it is because of this corrupt view of grace that we have, and it leads to a wrong view of people. But the second thing we learn is that greed leads to hypocritical living. And I want us to see how all of this has a progressive nature to it. It starts in the heart, and then it leads to a hypocritical life. If you look in verse 20, Gehazi's statement, he says, "As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him." Now, Gehazi calls on the name of the Lord just like Elisha did, but Gehazi's motives are not right like Elisha's motives were. And so here is Gehazi. He is using the Lord's name in order to put a stamp, in order to approve of what he wants to do. And we do the same exact thing, that we want to do something, but we don't have authority from God to do it. And so we deceive ourselves by putting a stamp on it, saying the Lord will be pleased with this and the Lord wants me to do this. And yet we find out, as Gehazi found out, that it is not what God has authorized, but it is something that we have dreamed up in our own minds. And due to our greed, God's will is ignored, and his people suffer, and we suffer as well. But like David, we need to have the honesty and pray, as he did in Psalm 139, verse 24. He says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. If there be any false way in me, lead me in the everlasting way." That's David. David had the honesty and the humility. He invited God to search him, to know his inner thoughts, that if there was any evil or wicked way in him, he wanted God to remove that from him and instruct him in the good and right way. And that is the heart that we ought to have. And that's the heart that will rule out the hypocritical living that sometimes we become ensnared to. But you know, when I look at this, or what this says to me, is that I find myself following in the same footsteps of Gehazi. That I can say I include the Lord in all of my plans, but yet and still, when the Lord's plans are not my plans, I ignore what he wants me to do. And I find myself pushing the Lord away from me. And I choose to trust in my wisdom rather than the Lord's wisdom. And all of that I've come to learn, it eventually has me miserable or frustrated with life. And so we have to learn to have the honesty, the humility, to put God first in all we do. To not just say that we trust in the Lord, but to show that we trust in the Lord. To do that by sharing our possessions. To do that by being honest. To do that by loving people and not just saying it. Because the Lord knows what's going on in our hearts. And he is the one who is going to make sure, or he is the one who is going to search us and know us. But in addition to Gehazi's hypocritical living, we learn that lying characterized his life. And this is exactly what happens when we live lives of hypocrisy. You know, lying is like a snowball effect. When I lie, I have to lie to cover up another lie. And I have to lie to cover up that previous lie. And to the point that things get out of hand, I made a huge mess of things, and all of a sudden, I just don't know where to turn. I'm just in a snowball of lies. And that is exactly what happened to Gehazi. And so before I get good at lying, I think I need to ask myself, is what I'm lying about worth compromising my integrity or my faith? That how is this lie going to affect the people? Is going to affect me or the people that are around me? And when we ask ourselves those questions, it helps us to see that we are not just thinking about ourselves, but we are thinking about our character and how that appeals to people that we know. And we also are thinking about others who we know will be affected by it. I think if Gehazi would have asked those questions, he would not be in the position that he was. But let's see the progression of his lies. If you see, his first lie is found in verse 22, where he lied on Elisha, that Elisha had sent him to Naaman, and that wasn't the truth, about two prophets in need of provisions. And then the second lie, in verse 23, Naaman had urged him, just like he did Elijah, but Gehazi, he didn't do what Elijah did. He didn't reject the gifts, and instead he took them. And once he took them, he tried to conceal them. He tried to put them away so that later he could find out what to do with them, and so he wouldn't get caught. And then when you look in verse 25, he attempts to tiptoe back to Elijah's house unnoticed and unscathed until the point that Elijah comes in and he confronts Gehazi about his sin. And so you can see from Gehazi just the progression of his lies, that here's one lie he has committed, and now he has to cover up that lie in order to move forward. And that is exactly what we do when our lives are led by lying. But another thing, and I think it's important to ask ourselves, why do we lie? I think that's a powerful point. What are the hidden motives behind me lying? I think once we discover those hidden motives, we can deal rightly. We can be more honest with ourselves. And I think some people lie so that they can look good. That we like to look good and we like to put on the front for people. That we want to be liked and we want to be accepted by people. But instead of putting on the front, I need to ask, how do I look before my God? What does my God think of me? How am I pleasing him and not how am I pleasing others? A second reason I think we lie is because we want to protect our self-image. And we don't like our lies to be exposed. And so in order to cover up our lies, we have to lie. And that's something that we all struggle with. And so instead of that, we need to have the honesty. We need to be willing to confess our sins and to be willing to recognize when there is hypocrisy in my life and that I need to change, because it is not about protecting our self-image. It is about making sure that our souls are right with the Lord. And then the third reason we lie is that we don't want to face the consequences. And, you know, I think of the old saying, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. And I think that certainly applies here. A lot of people, they want to lie, but they don't want to face the consequences. And I think a good thing to do is just to realize there are going to be consequences, and I need to visualize those consequences before I lie. And when we do that, I think we will be better off, better people for doing that. But there's another important principle that we need to understand, aside from hypocritical living and the fact that once I do that, lying can characterize who I am. And that is, and we learned this from Elijah, that our sin will eventually find us out. And we learned this principle from Elijah confronting Naaman. If you look in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 25, this is when Gehazi comes to the house of Elisha, and he says in verse 25, "But he went in and stood before his master, and Elisha said to him, 'Where have you been, Gehazi?' And he said, 'Your servant went nowhere.'" You know, there is an old saying that we're familiar with, that everything that's done in the dark will eventually come to light. And Naaman thought that what he had done, he was going to get away scot-free, unscathed, that nobody would know what he was doing. However, we learn that his sin soon find him out. And Elijah, as a good friend, confronts him about his sin. Hey, you know, this brings me back that I can remember times when I did something wrong. And, you know, my mom, she pressed me. I mean, she was like a shark in water. She could smell the blood on me. And she pressed me, and I lied about something. And then the interrogation process went on, and I kept lying. And then eventually, I was stuck, and I didn't know what to do. And so I've come to learn that everything that's done in the dark will eventually come to light. I can remember, and I'm just going to say I'm glad there are not a lot of our young people here today. Please don't ever do this. When I was in high school, after school, me and my friends had went to my house, and one of my friends had a vehicle. And I decided to get on the hood of the car while it was in motion. Very foolish choice. Don't do it. And I thought everything was good. I didn't think anything of it. And so when my mom got home from work that day, she started to question me, "How was school?" "It was good." "Well, what'd you do today?" "Well, you know, hung out with friends." "And where were you today?" "Well, I was outside." And as she's asking me all these questions, I'm starting to figure out, why are you asking me all these questions? And then it came to find out that my mom, she found out I was on the hood of that car and I was in trouble for it. Now, I couldn't find out who in the world told my mom that. And till this day, she still won't tell me. And so I have a bit of a vendetta towards some of my neighbors. That's not true. I'm actually grateful that they did that. But my mom found out, and it was because of she. If you knew my mom, she makes good friends with all of her neighbors. And so I learned that. I learned that everything that's done in the dark is going to eventually come to light. Well, you think about the Lord. The Lord, he doesn't need neighbors. He doesn't need anybody telling him anything. He knows everything because it's his job. He's the Lord. And so if we understood that, that we always live in the presence of the Lord, and it ought to create this healthy fear of God before us, that I don't want to do this because I don't want to disappoint my Lord. I don't want to displease my God. And so that is what we learn. As the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 13, that no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give account to. And when comes and when judgment day comes, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10, that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account of the things we've done in the body, whether good or bad. And even in that next verse in 2 Corinthians 5, 11, he says, knowing the fear of the Lord, we persuade men. And so knowing this help, knowing this fear, knowing that God is going to keep us accountable, that he is going to judge us, should help us keep away from our greed and from our covetousness, because we know that our sin is going to eventually find us out. And you know, many preachers, unfortunately, they get caught up in things like this. They get caught up in money scams. And, you know, I always ask the question. I remember an old preacher who recently got caught up in a money scam. And I ask myself, how in the world do you not know that you're going to get caught? And they don't think about that. And that's the reason. Greed blinds you to sin's consequences, where you're not thinking about your family. You're not thinking about God's people, but you're only thinking about yourself, your money, your power. And so we see that even in our religious world. And so if we see that in other people, I think that ought to give us the wisdom to say no to greed, because we know that our sin is going to eventually find us out, if not from a human, certainly from the Lord. But in addition to that, we learn that our decisions affect our descendants. That Naaman's decisions not only led to him contracting leprosy, but his descendants as well. Verse 27, Elijah told him, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants. And so here we learn that our decisions not only have an impact on our lives, but they also have an impact on others. And I can't help but think about David. You think about David in 2 Samuel 12, when he committed adultery and when he murdered. Did he ever think that his sin would be the result that his family, that it was a down spiral for his family? You think about Achan in Joshua chapter 6 and 7. His greed, his covetousness led to him and his entire family being stoned. And so, you know, and I've seen this in my life, when someone gets that new job or they have that new relationship, instead of worshiping the Lord regularly, instead of being able to serve God's people and serve their needs, well, they're all about the dollar and they're not at service regularly. And they're not able to meet people's needs because their job has consumed their lives. And it's all about power. It's all about making sure that my financial future is secure. And we do not realize that when we do that, our family suffers as well as God's kingdom. And that's something that we really need to hold on to. We see it every day, or we see it with people in our brotherhood, that people can go from having so much zeal in the Lord, but when their possessions and when their jobs get a hold of them, their faith soon grows cold. And so that's something that I think we should pay attention to. It's also seen when that young boy or that young girl who witnesses their dad coming home drunk, and then unfortunately when they get older, they come home drunk and they're living immoral lives. And so we can see even in our world, just the decisions that our parents make, they often impact our lives as well. Well, we learn that our sin is going to ultimately find us out, and we learn that our decisions affect our descendants. And so what is the antidote to all of this, to the greed that unfortunately ensnares us? And that is, we must choose to be content. And that is exactly what Elisha showed us. Now, contentment It seems cliche. It's something that we all know, but rarely do we pursue it. Rarely is it something that we want to pray for or we work hard for. But it's something that we need. And Elisha, he shows us that in chapter 16 of 2 Kings 5, where this is the where Naaman, he offers him these gifts. And this is what Elisha says. He says, "As the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing." And he urged him, but he refused. See, Elijah was satisfied with not taking anything. He knew where his blessings came from, and they came from the Lord. And once again, he is trying to illustrate to Naaman that you cannot pay for grace, that grace is a free gift. And so we learn from that that we won't be content if we are always buying stuff, if we're always flocking to every sale. We won't learn contentment. Paul said that I've learned to be content in whatever state I'm in. That's something that we have to put our minds to. It's something that we have to pray for, something we have to work hard for, because contentment is not just going to magically appear in our lives. It is a very hard task for a disciple to attain, but it's something that God calls us to. And so I need to pray for it. I need to work hard for it. I need to be willing to maybe unsubscribe to those emails I get from the stores about all the sales. I get those too, and they get me caught up. And I got to hit that unsubscribe button because I know if I don't, I'm probably going to end up going to buy something that I don't need. And so that's something that that we have to learn. And, you know, if anyone needs to hear this, it is really me. I mentioned earlier how my desire for possessions and all of that, it seems to provide this false sense of security, this peace and this happiness. And I've learned in my life that I've bought stuff and I've done stuff I know I should not have do that I'm ashamed of. And every single time, it's always I'm wanting more. The void is still there. It is never satisfied. And I think we have all been on the side of the end of that stick. And that's what God wants us to change. He wants us to see that our lives are not about the possessions. It's not about who knows us. It's not about what we own. It's about serving him and loving him. And he is the only reason. He is the only source of our true happiness, our peace. As Tim preached this morning, the Lord is the one who blesses us and keeps us safe. And so when we recognize that God is the only one that gives us this happiness and meaning in life, that he is the source of our blessings, that we ought to trust in the provider and not the provisions, it gives us an attitude of contentment. You know, a good friend told me the story of a man who was a very wealthy man. He had done extremely well for himself. But at the end of his life, he was on his deathbed and he didn't have anything. And he told my friend, you know, I am very happy. I have never been so happy in my life because I don't have people calling me for things and I don't have stuff consuming my life. And that's exactly what happens, that when you are faced with death at the end of life, all that matters is that I've served God and that I've loved his people. Doesn't matter what I've owned because I can't take it with me. But contrast that story to celebrity Howard Hughes, that I'm sure all of us know. That Howard Hughes, he built his empire, and he was a very wealthy man. He was very popular. He was very well known. But all of that had isolated Howard Hughes, that he put his value in those things. He didn't have time for family. He didn't have time for relationships. He didn't have time for the Lord. And as a result, he died lonely. He died with no hope. And so we learn just from those two stories what it means to choose have a life of contentment and what it means to not have a life of contentment. And so as I conclude, Gehazi's story is a sad story, one which happens quite too often. It is a story that stands in contrast to Naaman, one who was changed by the grace of God. And here is a man who had power, he had pleasure, and he tried to use that for God's purposes. And here is an Israelite. He is not having the faith that Naaman has. But what makes the story even more sad is that Gehazi was a man that had a lot of opportunity. I mean, he was a servant of Elisha. He sat at the feet of one of the greatest prophets known. He saw Elijah do wonderful things, and yet he did not capitalize on those opportunities. And as we enter the new year, it has me to think And we're going to be faced with a lot of opportunities to serve God, serve His people, a lot of opportunities to grow and make our devotion to the Lord stronger. And coming into this new year, are we going to have the faith of Naaman that is willing to give what he has to the Lord? Or are we going to have the faithlessness of Gehazi? Are we going to be willing to give up our greediness in order to make sure that someone else's life is blessed? I hope that we'll all be able to make that choice as the new year comes in. And so with that, you know what? I forgot a point. And that is, when we choose contentment, we need to have an honest commitment. And I think I made that point, but I knew you were going to end up seeing it on the slide. So there you go. Well, before we start the new year, is there anybody here who wants to give their life to the Lord? The Lord Jesus Christ, He died for you so that you can make sure that your greed and whatever you have is taken away, and you can be your sins can be washed away in the waters of baptism. He died for you so that you could live for Him. And if there is anybody that wants to respond to that call, we ask you to come now as we stand and as we sing.